When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It would be a wolf's fun, eh?
On goes Paul. Seaford might yet win it here for Wolves. Flat in the shot. What a goal!
Hello and welcome everyone to today's episode of the Wolves Fancast, part of the Audi Network. Joining me on this, I was going to say cold Sunday evening, it definitely feels like we're hitting the winter. And I think as I'm joined by Ed, Tom and Luke, we're all feeling the effects of the clock going back, aren't we, gents?
Yeah, we've all got kids, haven't we? So it doesn't
mean nothing.
Count. Yeah, it means absolutely nothing. Yeah.
How dare they not respect that you're supposed to get an extra hour of sleep? Because my body is working overtime right now, but I will do it, ladies and gentlemen, for the Fancast, because I'm really keen to talk about the game that happened yesterday. Wolves did draw 2-2 against Newcastle, and there's lots of talking points, lots of discussion to be had. Right from the off, to be honest, guys, because Gary O'Neill made a couple of changes from the last time out with Lamina and Semedo coming in, but Traore starting once again. I mean, Ed, were you happy with the team?
Yeah, no surprises. Semedo comes straight back in. Lamina has to come straight back in. They're both nailed on starters, aren't they? Maybe the only talking point was dropping Joao Gomez for Boubacar Traore, but Traore played well against Luton and in his cameos this season, so I think he deserves his chance, I think.
Yeah, I sort of feel like that, and I think particularly on like Joao Gomez, I mean, it's easy to forget he's still a young lad, and I don't think anyone was almost expecting him to start every game this season. It was only through necessity in a way that he's been expected to, but overall, everyone's kind of just expecting that lineup, weren't they, Tom?
Yeah, I think the only question is now is how he's going to line those players up, whether it's going to be 4 at the back or 3/5 at the back, depending on how you look at it. And, you know, through what he was saying on Monday Night Football and what he said throughout his time with us is he's always said he wants to be adaptable. So if you've got players that can play in multiple positions, then, you know, the starting 11 isn't the be-all and end-all, you know, because the system is, you know, can be different regardless. And again, it was a bit of a hybrid sort of system. It's more 4, wasn't it, yesterday? And he just put, he just had 8 Nori glued to Trippier. So if Trippier pushed up, it was a 5. If he didn't, it was a 4. And I think generally, I think he got it about right.
Yeah, I think it felt like Wolves really exploited Newcastle and their slight midweek hangover from European football. And I can't remember seeing Wolves really press a team to that intensity in a long time. It felt like, from the off, to be honest, that they were really up and at them. And I think it potentially helped having Traore in the middle of the park. He's got a big physical presence. But let's talk about Ait Nouri, because, again, he seems just like a man reborn, doesn't he, Luke?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like he's playing with a newfound confidence. I think there was question marks in the summer over whether he's even going to stay or whether Lopetegui was going to get rid of him. So did Lopetegui have that confidence, have that faith in him? Was he instilling that confidence? Possibly not. And it feels like Gary O'Neill's come in. He's really giving him that confidence boost. And I feel with any player at any level, when you're playing with confidence, you know, you're going to see an improvement in your performances, because there's a lot of talk of signing Creswell in the summer, and Ait Nouri was one of the ones that many fans, including myself, was thinking, well, if Creswell was to come in, then we're going to have Creswell, Ait Nouri, Bueno, and Totti, who can even play at left back. Ait Nouri is potentially the one that we're going to sell to make room for him. But he, you know, he's been given his opportunity and he's been absolutely fantastic. I mean, I was thinking yesterday at the game, I was talking to somebody at halftime and I said, you know what, I really like Bueno, I do. Hugo, not the cocknose fucker. I really like Bueno at left back. But is there any room for him at the moment with the form that Ait Nouri is in? And I think it's safe to say that Ait Nouri has really cemented that place in the team. And as good as Bueno is, it's going to be very, very difficult for him to get back into the starting 11.
Fitness is the biggest thing, isn't it, Rich? I think that might be the difference. He's available for, what, 85 to 90 now, whereas he was lucky to get, we were lucky to get 60 full minutes out of him, you know, in his career up until the last, what, four or five games. I think that's the biggest difference for me. I think the talent's always been there, but he wasn't available for the whole game.
Yeah, he'd either been getting subbed off early or he didn't seem like he'd be able to play sort of 290 minutes in a row. And he said it's the difference. And I think even before the switch to 3-5-2, and I know Sean in the YouTube comments, big shout out to everyone who's watching live and on repeat. Sean says it makes sense that Ait Nouri is better in a five. He can afford to be on his front foot with extra coverage behind it. It's completely true, but he's looked solid in the back four as well. Like, he's not been someone who's really let the side down to a degree. And I think, Tom, you're right, but his defensive play limited Trippier a lot. And I know they played midweek who fucking who. But he seemed to really push him back and make Newcastle think about what they're doing a lot more than I think they actually anticipated, to be honest.
I think Trippier got the highest stats of all
I think
to the box
from what I saw yesterday
in the Premier League. And so, like, I don't remember him putting too many crosses in. So, if they give you nullify Trippier, you take out a massive part of Newcastle.
Yeah.
So, I think he was.
I thought he looked average at best yesterday, Trippier. When you're looking at an England international, then if that's the best we've got to offer, I know they've been sort of shoehorning him in at left back, and it's only one performance to go off, but he looks so poor. He looked, to me, he looked a yard off the pace and he was full of fouls. Even off the ball, if you notice off the ball, when we was countering, he loves a pull of the shirt or, you know what I mean, like trying to hold somebody back, which I believe indicates that you're struggling. I've always said that, whether you're playing on a Sunday morning or in the Premier League, if you've got to put your hands on somebody, pull a shirt, hold them back, it's because you're struggling against them. And I felt Trippier really struggled yesterday.
I mean, it seemed across the park because, again, I thought that Dan Byrne was similar and he had an off-the-ball check. And I don't like him. I don't know what it is about him.
He's fucking
He's too tall, mate. That's what it is.
He's wank.
I don't quite get the hype around him. And I know, like, don't get me.
Because he does funny dances on Sky Sports. That's all it is.
Yeah.
He's shit.
In fact, is it the fact that he's like a 6'6" left back as well?
Yeah, like, he's a bit of a novelty. He's a bit of a novelty. But as soon as I saw Neto up against Dan Byrne yesterday, I thought, fucking get in. Anytime booking Dan Byrne on the request of bet, banker. Because he cannot handle pace. He just cannot handle it. It's just a fact. And Newcastle fans or whoever can say he's had a fantastic 12 months or whatever. But Dan Byrne is somebody who you need to identify as a target to get at. Because you will get at Dan Byrne. You'll get in behind him. You'll get fouls out of him. I love it when we play against Dan Byrne. Like when we had Traore. Traore up against Dan Burn, fantastic. Neto up against Dan Burn, fantastic. I just don't get the hype. I really don't get the hype.
He did very well yesterday to not get a booking earlier. There was 6 fouls that he did before he finally got a booking. And the one he got a booking for was probably the least of all of them. I think he was, I think Luke's spot on. He was being run ragged yesterday by Neto or Huang when they switched and Cunha. And he got very lucky in the first half, if I remember, that he kind of plucked a ball out of the air that he looked surprised that he managed to do it. And if he hadn't have done that over his shoulder with his right foot, which he wasn't expecting, then we were in 2-1-1 on our right. So yeah, he's a novelty, isn't he? And he's a local lad with his local team, and he's made the Jamie Vardy route, hasn't he, up through the leagues? And I think we're all pretending that he's better than he is, and I think Newcastle fans probably know that for them to really move on, he's one of the weak links that's got to go.
The only reason that he starts is because his backup is Matt Target.
Yeah.
Who's even worse?
I was going to say that must be like a trip down PTSD lane for those two fullbacks at Molineux. Like, just as fine as we get rid of Adama Traore, they have to like deal with prime inform Pedro Neto. Just, yeah, but it was the intensity across the forward players. It did feel like they were just targeting them. And I know like Gary O'Neill's come out and sort of said that he wants our wingers to attack. He wants them to dribble. And it just seemed like we kept asking those questions. And I don't know, I watched a couple of the Newcastle games for the last week or two. And Eddie Howe's always quite good at setting up his teams and especially like getting them on the counter-attack and things like that. And there was one point, it must have been in the first half, just before the goal. It was a way the back three worked and they were trying to exploit the space almost, that bit between your centre-half and the left-back. And Wolves just, it just seemed like they knew what Newcastle were going to do time and again. And that, I guess, comes from good coaching and good prep work and not doing the silly little mistakes for, I mean, to be fair, having a third centre-half definitely helps with that as well, I think. But I know, it just felt like Wolves had their number to a degree for me. I appreciate we scored 2 goals and we're going to talk about the first one in a second. There wasn't anything about Newcastle where I thought, oh, this is a Champions League level side. I'm not being arrogant, am I?
I think there's a couple of times where they found some pockets of space in between our defence and midfield, where they was able to pick the ball up and then drive at our defence. Almiron did look dangerous at times as well when he was sort of breaking the lines with his running. But like you said, Rich, I think if you're looking at Newcastle as a Champions League team, you know, I don't think they had us on the back foot for prolonged periods of time. I don't think they really caused us too many headaches or issues. I think, like I said, the space between our defence and midfield, yes, they did find that pocket a couple of times. But beyond that, I didn't see much to think like, yeah, this is creme de la creme, elite level football. I think they're still a long, long way off being where they possibly think they are. And there's a lot of work to do within that squad. To me, it just seemed like we was playing any team from sort of Brighton, Tottenham, Villa sort of levels of team, that, you know, that sort of 8th to 12th.
Yeah.
That's how it seemed to me.
I mean, but we'll talk about the goal, the first goal, because it does feel like every other game at the moment, doesn't it, Tom, where there is a point where Sar is just liable for a cock-up. And even before the goal, I remember seeing him spray one absolutely out of play and thinking, like, he seems to be someone where if he doesn't do something quite right, like, you know, an unforced kick that goes out of play, it just seems to get in his head a little bit. And the absolute basics of coming for that ball and not getting it, because clearly he'd have had a shout. He gave a shout to come get for it. And if you're coming back for that, you've got to win it, haven't you?
Yeah, he had one of his games, unfortunately. It probably, Jose Sarr's a very, very good goalkeeper. The reason probably he's playing for us and not someone perceivably better than us is because of these errors that he has. I think you say that with a lot of the players that we tend to pick up. If they're probably flawed in some way, otherwise they'd be playing for one of the real big boys. You're going to get two or three of these a season, unfortunately. Although I will say, usually his handling is usually impeccable. I think he's coming for crosses, and his handling from crosses is usually really, really good. It's a few of the things that let him down, with his feet or making rash decisions in coming out for stuff. So this is probably the first time we've seen a significant error with his handling. It seemed like his hands were even closed before the ball got to him. He just sort of mistimed the catch or something. I don't know. It was just a bit strange. And it didn't look like a foul. And I knew it wasn't going to be given as a foul. And he tried his best to bluff it and, put the ball where he thought the free kick should have been. But it was never going to be disallowed.
Yeah, there was a level of gamesmanship there. And watching it back on replay, it's like getting checked by VAR. And I remember seeing it, and we'll talk about harsh decisions in a minute. It's like, if this somehow gets overturned, because I think he actually tries with Traore effectively. I think Longstaff doesn't even really make any of much contact with him. I thought, I tell you what, if Wolves get a free kick here, we have fucking got one here. And yeah, it was just silly because it felt just against the run of play. It was a nothing ball into the box by them. Especially when you consider where that ball came into the box and stuff like that, it just felt such a needless one to concede, considering how solid we've been at the back until that point.
Yeah, and Totti did his best as well, didn't he? I mean, it's a great finish in the end.
Yeah.
As well, because the first shot should go in. Totti's managed to somehow get something in front of it, and then it's a hook over your shoulder. Not a hit and hope, because it's, he's a very good finisher, Callum Wilson. But even then, we were still bodies on the line kind of defending. So, yeah, I don't know if Jose Sarr's been training with England cricket team or something, because he's put one down there, hasn't he? But they've embarrassed themselves.
It's bizarre you say that. And this isn't just me shoehorning in a graphic that I stole off Opto Analyst. But they had that goal ranked really highly in terms of its XG rating. And I kind of looked just like, he scored effectively an overhead kick. I know it's like 6 yards out or whatever, but,
When you I don't think XG, it's based on where you are on the pitch and who's in front of you. I don't think it takes the body position of the striker into consideration.
It might count, the first bit of that might count the one Totti box as well. So I think it's probably a collective of the two rather than the final one.
Effectively, on the XG scoreline, it had Newcastle at 2.18 versus Wolves 0.98. And again, you look at the stats, the wider stats of the game. We had, more shots on target and things like that, more corners. And I quite like XG for what it roughly does, but it just felt a bit bizarre, especially for Lamina's goal as well. So Wolves, one of the biggest things about yesterday's game for me is how they responded to difficult situations. Because we've seen this Wolves team crumble a lot, even under O'Neill. But we did it last season, and how they can't really always handle those emotional situations. And the fact that we went down twice, had a bad penalty go against us, had our star man get injured, their resilience was just perfect, to be honest. And how they responded to the goal, I sort of mentioned, even the build up for a corner, which led to a goal, that was so nearly a goal as well.
Yeah, last year we had an argument that we were emotional because we had an emotional manager, didn't we, under Lopetegui? And maybe there's a little bit of a difference now in their mindset, because they don't quite have that sort of Spanish hothead on the sidelines. I don't know if that's an issue or a possibility, but we definitely seem to be more resilient than we were even last year when you know, we pulled everything out of the irons after Christmas, didn't we, after the World Cup, and finished comfortably in the end. So we definitely, yeah, we fought back when realistically you would say that a Champions League team probably should be able to see out a 2-1 away at a team that, you know, had a manager with 6 days to go to the season, and, you know, we lost Neves, etc. But yeah, they didn't let any of that bother them yesterday.
This is an advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online. We all carry different stresses, big and small. It could be from work, stuff going on at home, or just from supporting a football team you flatter to deceive, and as the bedsheets have always said, let us down. We often bottle up these stresses and try and keep a lid on them, but when you do that, it can start to affect you negatively. That's where therapy comes in. It gives you a place to get these things off your chest, get down to root cause, and figure out how to work through what's weighing you down. Therapy is there to help develop positive coping skills. It's not just for people who have experienced major trauma. It's about empowering you to be the best version of yourself. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not look and give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners can get 10% off their first month using the code betterhelp.com/wanderers. That's betterhelp.com/wanderers. Let's get back to the show.
First corner they've conceded, Newcastle, or first set piece they've conceded all season as well, which is always nice because we don't score many corners. This is first goal for us as well, which, yeah, surprising almost.
I was going to say, I had that when we were like, oh, it's his first goal. It's like, nah, he's got a couple, hasn't he? And then, like, you realize, no, he's actually quite a defensive midfielder these days. But I mean, you sort of mentioned it's first. We're not prolific from corners, and even when you look back, I thought in my head it was from the other way around. It was like a proper in swinger, but he's hit with such a great arc, hasn't he? That Lamina's had to work hard to get his header, but it's come a long way and it's beaten Pope's in no man's land. Like, we talk about bad goalkeeping, and we've dragged out Sot. Nick Pope did bad for both of those goals. Yeah,
I agree. He's awful on his feet as well.
He's a bad keeper.
He's a good shot stopper.
He's a good shot stopper. He's obviously big lads. He claims a lot of crosses. The reason he's not dislodged Pickford is because he's awful with his feet. I mean, he had that one where he came out yesterday and got absolutely nowhere near it. They had the one last season with Raul when he should have been sent off. If I remember right, didn't he? Had a bad game for England as well. He's had a few. So
he lost. Did he not do something? Was it Liverpool that he did it and then didn't get into the League Cup final?
Yeah,
wasn't that him rushing out?
And that's the reason he didn't get sent off against us, because Liverpool was literally I'm sure it was the week before or something daft like that.
Mm.
And I'm adamant that he didn't get sent off against us because I'm sure it was his first game back from that suspension.
Once against Liverpool and once against Wolves. That's the other explanation for it.
Yeah.
Well, Newcastle have got these grand aspirations of where they want to be with their oil money. And part of it might be bringing in a certain Mr. Neves in, but I know that feels like now they've got that next foundation up, but they're going to need to improve that goalkeeping situation. And you can see why he did well at Burnley, where all he has to do is just save shots for 90 minutes. But yeah, that his positioning for the first goal was poor. And, you know, it wasn't the deciding factor in the goal against Wolves, because there's a lot of other stuff between, you know, him not catching a ball and punching it and going to the back of the net. But yeah, just again surprising. And no flag either. Nothing in the media, because why would there need to be? Should we talk about the penalty?
How long you got?
We're 24 minutes into the recording, so probably an hour if we need to. But
We've got that extra hour we saved, right? So
exactly. We've got time on our hands. We haven't got anything better to do on a Sunday evening. And I've got a feeling, Luke, you've got a rant lined up for this, haven't you?
Do you know what? As much as I'd love to have a rant, I just think, what's the fucking point? What is the point? Nothing's going to change.
Yeah.
You know, I've put my opinions on Twitter. In my opinion, the laws of the game need a review sooner rather than later. I've had people arguing with me that it's nothing to do with the laws, but the laws state that contact can result to a foul. And that is the issue. Too many refs, VAR, on-field officials, whatever, giving penalties because of any contact. Now, in my opinion, contact doesn't automatically equal a foul. Yesterday's incident wasn't a foul. In what planet has Wang deliberately gone to foul Fabian Schär? None. Has he initiated the contact even? I think that's even debatable, if he's even initiated the contact. It's a piss poor decision. And when the VAR takes 3 minutes to look at a decision to determine whether it's a penalty or not, chances are it's not a fucking penalty. If it's taken you 3 minutes to see if it's a penalty, best guess is it's not a penalty. So then we're looking down the lines of, is it corruption or is it incompetence or is it a mixture of both? Who knows? But it's one of the two. It's as simple as that now. It's either corruption and money from somewhere, be it Saudi Arabia or whatever, is making decisions within the English Premier League, or the match officials are completely incompetent. They're earning six figures a year plus expenses to make poor decisions like that. Now, I understand they're humans and humans make errors. A defender will make an error. Jose Sa made an error yesterday. Matias Kuna made an error with some of his finishing yesterday. Players, footballers do make mistakes. But when these referees are on six figures a year plus expenses, they've got the assistance of multiple replays from multiple angles. There's no time restriction on when they need to come to the conclusion of the decision, yet they're still making these piss poor decisions. It's not acceptable. For a multi-million pound industry, product, whatever you want to call it, to be every week, the conversation is dominated around VAR every single week without fail now, which shows that it's not working and something needs to be done to make sure that results and outcomes are not dominated by VAR every single week. If there's more than three Premier League matches in, say, on a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday, guarantee there's going to be at least one contentious decision that's going to invoke heavy debate. Now, the only thing left to decide is it corruption, where it's just blatant cheating, and somebody somewhere is paying money to determine the results of the Premier League matches and the final league table, or is it incompetence? And it can only be one of the two. And now somebody needs to make that review and make that decision of what it is and get to the bottom of it. So are we dealing with corruption or are we dealing with incompetence? So we need to find out which one of the two it is. Hopefully it's not both. Which one of the two it is. And then we need to get to the root of that problem. Because me personally, if I'm the CEO or whatever of a multi-million pound product, why am I going to pay people six figures a year plus expenses to be so incompetent? It makes no sense. And that's all I've got to say, to be fair. It's bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, when you've got Alan Shearer even saying, yeah, it ain't a penalty. I mean, I think Gary O'Neill kind of summed it up really well because, you know, honestly, listeners, I don't actually like talking about refereeing decisions. I don't like
boring, isn't it?
It is boring every week. Repetitive. We don't get anywhere because Gary O'Neill sort of sums it up.
Second goal is never ever a penalty ever. Terrible decision on field and from VAR.
And it's like to give the penalty in the first place, he doesn't need to do it. And I think that's the bit which I find so frustrating about VAR. And you know, Stu will tell me it's an IFAB directive and it's about clear and obvious errors. But that penalty, like in real time, you go, okay, well, maybe it's something, but maybe it isn't. And he's given it, and all right, cast it aside. I'm not quite sure what Hwang's doing in that position. Like, it's a bit old Hwang, isn't it, Tom?
We've brushed over that. It was pretty awful, wasn't it? That was unfortunately. He takes a touch, which isn't great, and then he spends about, well, it seemed like 5 seconds. Obviously, it wasn't that long, but it felt like that long, just to try and to think where he's going to pass it. And he swings a boot, stops. So that's bad. But it's such a bad decision. I'm only going to defend Anthony Taylor slightly because he did that. He had an awful game for me, Anthony Taylor. Had no control of the game. He only started booking people with a few minutes left. So, you know, he couldn't control the game whatsoever. I actually thought when I watched it live, it was in front of me. It just looked from my angle. I'm Steve Ball, South Bank end. It looked like a penalty in real time. But then when you look at the replay, and you only have to look at it maybe once or twice from maybe one or two angles, it's not a penalty, is it? He's standing foot, actually. If you go in on, like, he gets the ball first, he's standing foot, actually hits the ball before there's any contact whatsoever. So for me, that's already a reason not to give it. Shah's literally dived into his leg to try and initiate a contact, and his leg isn't moving forward at that point anyway. Yeah. So it ticks so none many boxes. It's unbelievable, but it's Gillett, isn't it, again?
Yeah.
I think he had to catch a quick flight to bloody Saudi to get Fury winning on points on the fight last night. he's clueless, that guy. I've not seen him. They drafted him in for Australia because he was highly rated or something.
He's the one that Stu was going on about.
Absolute joke. He's the one for Lamina, wasn't it, as well?
For
me, it was the textbook example. That was a textbook example of, I think you need to look at that again. Because I think I'm not 100%, you know, I'm looking at it after 3 minutes and I'm pretty much on the fence. You need to look at that again and see. And I guarantee, if Taylor had seen that again, there's no way he'd have given that penalty. 100%.
See, I still think he would have given it, you know.
Yeah,
do you think?
Yeah.
I think the original decision is an ego thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's, I'm the man, I'm going to make that decision. I'm going to say that's a penalty. And for me, the way the refs are using it, I think it is mostly corruption. They're using VAR as a way to bail them out if they do make a cock-up, and it should be the other way around. I'm not sure, lads. Have a look at it. That's all you need to do. That's what any other sport that uses a VAR equivalent, that is what it's there for. It's there to do the check. When a referee just presses his ear and says, lads, I'm not sure, you know, guys, I'm not sure, tell me. We can take 3 minutes out to have a look at it. While it's going on, you do that in the background and we'll let the game go on. But he's made that call. And then the reason that it never gets overturned when they go to the monitor, or when, you know, they're not sent to the monitor, is the ego thing, isn't it? Is you've made that decision. You're the man. You've made that decision. You're the man in black in the middle. It's not a pen. I think there's an angle this morning on that I watch when I watch Match of the Day. Hwang kicks the floor, not the player. Mm-hmm. So there's another reason to not give it. It shouldn't take 3 minutes either. Luke was spot on with his first point. If it's taking 3 minutes, there's enough doubt. Stupid.
But, I mean, even if you want to argue, yeah, but there was contact and, you know, if there's contact, it's a penalty and you want to be that sort of fucking dickhead.
No.
As a sport, as a spectacle, whether you're playing or viewing, regardless of whether it's for your team or against your team, you don't want to see those sort of penalties given, do you? Or even free kicks, regardless of whether it's a penalty or not, or even free kicks, you don't want to see those sort of calls made. It's poor, really, really poor.
Yeah, I just think I find it so frustrating, and we've had some really great comments on YouTube about it, you know, around, you know, they hide behind the term clear and obvious error because it's clear
and obvious. Why does it take so long to come to a decision? Yeah.
That's such an ambiguous term as well, isn't it? Clear and obvious.
It's so undefined, isn't it? Because it's like, well, who's it? You know, what is clear and obvious? And
I'll tell you what's clear and obvious, that the game is corrupt. That's clear and obvious.
Yeah, and I find it infuriating. And, you know, we had a comment from Steve Kelsall. You know, rugby shows how effective tech can be. They have clear communication. The ref isn't ego-driven. And you know, you hear it when they talk about it. And I've got no issue if the ref... Right, I don't think it was a penalty. Nor does 95% of people. But if he wasn't given a penalty, but it turned out that on a replay that Huang had, you know, swung and kicked him instead of kicking the ball away, and the ref goes, something happened, but I'm not quite sure what it was. Fill me in, and then I'll review it. But I just don't understand. You say the ego, the lack of humility, just to go, actually, let's, instead of me giving the decision, because once I've given it, it's actually really hard to go back. But it seems it should, in theory, be easier to not make the decision and then get the help, because you at least let the game flow and it can be checked. And I know it's not changed. It's not going to change anytime soon. We keep having this, you know, big circle, and it just impacts the game. And actually, I think I differ actually in terms of VAR. I actually think it's quite good for the game, personally.
If used correctly. The key word from Stu's comment there, communication. Listen to the communication of a rugby referee, and they say, oh, well, rugby players are more respectful. Do you know why they're more respectful? Because when the referee's made a decision, he communicates it clearly to the player. This is why I've given this, because of X, Y, and Z. Now, as a footballer, if a ref is to say, I've given the foul because you clicked his heel and, you know, you caught it, you made him lose his balance and then lose possession of the ball. Okay, but the communication from football referees at every level throughout the pyramid, fucking terrible, absolutely terrible. Mm-hmm. And if refs can learn to communicate better and manage that environment better, there'll be less issues. And to me, the key thing, like Stu said, the communication, the difference in communication between rugby union and football, and that is why rugby is officiated in such a better manner than football is.
It's absolutely sucking the fun out of it as well. Luke, I know you coach, you know, boys and girls teams. We aren't going to have a game anytime soon if it carries on like this, because it's not fun anymore. No. It is not fun. It is boring. You go to a game and someone scores a goal and you go, hang on, let's not jump about just yet. Let's wait 20 minutes. And kids aren't going to have that joy anymore. You're not going to enjoy goals going in anymore. You're going to be like, all you had to do before was look at the linesman, you know, the assistant referee. And now you have to be like, hang on, let me check my phone. I'm going to check Twitter. I'm going to check X, sorry. I'm going to, you know, check in when my mate is watching it on the TV at home. It's so boring to talk about Anthony Taylor and not Huang's goal, or even Callum Wilson's sort of overhead kick almost goal. Do you know what I mean? We are talking about an ex-prison officer and whether or not he makes the correct decisions or not. It's so boring. No one goes to the game to watch him referee.
And that's the problem. The best referees are the ones that you don't notice.
Yeah.
When you don't notice that the referee is on the pitch, that's because he's doing a good job 9 times out of 10. They are the best referees, the one that you don't notice. But now we're in a position where the referees are becoming bigger superstars than some of the star strikers in the Premier League. And they're getting more column inches, they're certainly getting more debate on podcasts, it seems like, because of
I don't want to know their names.
But you know, Anthony Taylor, you know, you probably know his cock size, his missus, you know, where he grew up, what school he went to, you know, everything about them now, because they have to be the star of the show. And I'm guessing it's fucking small.
Right, to pull this back a little bit, as I mentioned, there are two great things about this game for me. A, Wolves resilience, because, yeah, went, came back from behind twice. After the amount of times Wolves had a crap decision go against them, they've not quite found their rhythm. The second thing, I can't remember if me and Tom might have spoken about this before, is when teams score a goal against you, but you can't imagine Wolves scoring. And they did that yesterday for me, and that Hwang goal. Firstly, the like back heel flick by Lamina, just we don't even need to cover that. When it gets punched out, and Lamina's got actually a really tricky task because he's facing his own goal, it's coming up high, he doesn't have a lot of options. But just to like do a casual back heel back into play, fantastic. And you got Toti Gomez who decides to turn into Arjen Robben. Who fucking saw that coming?
Yeah, on the right as well.
Yeah.
It's the first time I've never seen him look clumsy on the ball as well. I love Toti, but he normally looks like he's about to fall over. But yeah, he was in complete control.
It was like he went, oh, I know exactly what. This is, I've been waiting for my opportunity to play on the right wing after playing it centre-half and left-back. And then Hwang, you know, impersonating prime Helder Costa. But the ball that Toti Gomez plays, and it almost feels in a way like training ground in terms of Hwang making that run and then sort of checking back. Dan Byrne goes sliding out of play. But I can't remember the last time I saw Wolves score a goal like that. And that gave me a lot of joy, as much as anything and everything else about that goal.
The cutback was unbelievable. If someone, you know, if Salah had done that, it'd be all over Twitter for the next week.
So it would have to be Salah's right foot as well. It has to be Salah's. That's his left foot as well, remember?
Yeah. So he just chops back without, I don't know, just without almost you seeing it. It's incredible, really. And he was having a stinker before that. I turned to my old man not long before that. And I was like, we're going to have to take him off because there's a few times we've just ran into like people or there was like a simple pass on and he smashed it or he miscontrolled it at the penalty, but then just pulls that out of the bag. So yeah, fair play to him. It was great as well to see all the team really go up for the goal as well. And they all went at the corner, didn't they, slide? And I think there seems to be a real togetherness. And when Neto went down injured, you know, they were all around him and everything. I think that there does seem to be a real connection there between management, players and fans. So yeah, it seems to be going in the right direction.
Is he our best finisher we've had since Ebanks Blake? You know, natural finisher. Because he really is a natural finisher. Yeah. The only thing he could do before this season was put the ball in the back of the net. And that turn is, Tom's right, I think if Salah does it, it'd have to be with his right foot, cutting in with his wrong foot and slotting it in the corner. It's such a good finish. It's such a good finish, and I don't think enough's being made of it. It's ridiculous.
Isn't his conversion rate something like mid-40s or something bizarre? Like, I can't remember him shooting other than that goal yesterday. No. His conversion rate's like unbelievably high. Like he's outperforming his XG by like an insane amount as well, I think.
Yeah, but it wouldn't surprise me. Sounds silly. It's a really good trait, isn't it, to find those little positions. But even for someone like Hwang, like we'd have probably seen him rush it like 6 months ago and try and have it on his right for the first time and maybe Byrne gets a block and we get a corner. But it takes a player with a lot of confidence to do what he did, to check back inside and have that little bit of composure to finish. It felt really similar to that goal he scored against Liverpool when he was at Salzburg, which I think kind of slightly put him on the map, where he sort of completely sells Van Dijk for a dummy as well. And again, he just doesn't quite do it enough. And it's like little things like that where he is just someone who is playing at the top of his game. He's got that confidence that, Tom, you're right, he didn't have a great game. Like, by his own standards recently, he was at fault for the penalty, whether it, you know, we'll agree if it was probably a harsh penalty. He still messed up in the first place for it. But again, to not let that impact his game, and with respect to Wank, he's sort of player might go hiding after something like that. But stepped up to the plate in a big way.
Yeah, his character arc is ridiculous, isn't it? Where Huang's come from, and he just seems to be, getting better and better in terms of at least the output of results. Because, like you say, that was not what you'd have expected from him, you know, this time last year. And it, yeah, the only obviously down point that you're probably going to come onto at some point, which is the Neto injury. But you know, we do have a finisher there, so hopefully he'll continue. What is it, six in a row? Is it for Huang as well?
Yeah, six in a row at home. Yeah,
is he?
Yeah, isn't he called John Richards' record? I think top flight goals in a row at home. Yeah, I think so.
So
because he scored at Everton last home game last season, and then he scored in every home game this season.
So my lad said to me today. He said Wang's gonna get sold for some big money. He reckons we're going to sell him for some big money. And I told him, I put my Tim Ford hat on and I said, he sold his soul to the Illuminati. Because ever since he's been doing all that shit with Gucci, he started scoring.
Yeah, I was going to say, the other Huang stat is that he scored six Premier League goals this season, his best return in a single campaign in the competition, which is a bit wild, to be honest, in his third season with the club. And five of his six goals have come at Molineux, with no player scoring more Premier League home goals so far this season. So, yeah, such a strong player. And I think you said the only genuine downside was Pedro Neto's injury. And I say we've all been there. The sound in the stadium when he pulled up, because we've been there. It's usually in the 10th minute when you're hungover and you've not warmed up properly. But to see him kind of literally go full flow and just quite literally see his hamstring pull up, I think listened back here to the commentator.
I felt like we were going to score off that attack. You know?
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah. Score off that attack. Oh my God, bro, my arse.
We were 4-on-3, I think.
Yeah. 4-on-3 and Dan Byrne was backpedalling.
Yeah.
Who are we doing, Matt?
I mean, I sit in the North Bank now, so Neto picked the ball up on the right and he was about 25 yards out. He started cutting inside. Probably to get the pistol out of me now, but I stood up out of my seat because, you know, we sit down in the North Bank, we've civilised. So I stood up out of my seat. I even put my arms in the air because I'm thinking something's got to happen here. And then you just see him grab the back of his leg and heartbreaking. Like, I don't think I looked at the pitch for a good couple of minutes. But did Newcastle even kick the ball out or did they carry on playing?
No, we
carried on.
Part of me does have a lot of respect because I think hearing the noise of the commentators and in the stadium where it was like, because it was clear what had happened, and it, you know, there's like no doubt that like he isn't faking it. And you do, I guess, always when like, let's, you know, when there's a 50-50 or whatever and you see the player go down, you're like, oh, he's trying to win on it. It was so clear that he was injured, what injury he'd done, the prevalence of it. But Wolves like, yeah, but we're also attacking and want to see this through, to be honest. And like, part of me did admire it, but also it's like Pedro Neto is sort of a player we quite like on the pitch scoring. Just part of me loves it because you know what?
We just got to try and take the positives out of it. Gary O'Neill said that he was walking around the changing rooms, which is a massive positive. We've got an international break coming up, which is going to give us an extra week or so, and obviously take away a game week where he can recover. So, on the positive side, he could be back in 4 or 5 games.
I think it's going to be less than that. Pedro Neto has tweeted or X'd, however you like to describe saying, apart from all the noise, I am here to say that I'll be out for a couple of weeks, but very soon I'll be out there stronger than before, already focused on my recovery. See you soon. So I think it is very much a pulled hamstring, so he's going to probably be out for 2 to 3 weeks.
I think Martin W is making some good comments in the comment section. He said, we would have won if Neto stayed on. And I believe we would have.
Interesting.
I really believe we would have. I felt we had the momentum was in our favour. And he's also said, which I think you can't argue against, not being negative now, but he's prone to injury now. And because I'm a sad bastard, yeah, as soon as he got that injury, in my mind, I just imagine the Football Manager scout report, yeah, where it says maybe prone to injuries. And I thought Neto is 100% having that trait on the next update. Maybe, what is it? Maybe susceptible to injuries or something. Yeah.
Yeah. He'll have the medical cross in the circle and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, because Lamina pulled up with cramp at one point, like after Neto's injury as well. And I appreciate that they ran a hard game, and like I have no idea on the stats, I'll be honest, everyone, but they look like they put max effort in, and I know
it's Ben Kilburn's knee. See the strapping on there.
Yeah.
Look at a knee brace on.
Hmm.
So I'll do that too, but
shows what O'Neill thinks of Santi at the moment. He can't get on when we've only got a centre off of one leg.
I would say the contrast in styles for Sascha Kolasinac coming on for Pedro Neto, I did enjoy, because they are such different players. But did Wolves have a good shot for a penalty towards the end on Sascha Kolasinac?
Personally, not.
I feel like if you give that, he will win you about 3 penalties a game just on his height alone. But I think with the Pedro Neto one, right, we've got 6 days until our next game. What's everyone thinking in terms of Mr. O'Neill's tactics, in terms of replacing him? Do we think that maybe get
Bellegarde on the right?
I think that's the only change you can make, can't he? He ain't going to play Sarabia.
Oh God!
The only other one is you put Cunha out wide, but then especially after watching Monday Night Football, it's more about what Cunha does off the ball by the looks of it. And there's no way Sasha's doing that job. Not even when he's not.
Cutting
out a double pivot.
Get your head down, son.
Yeah. I like Sasa, and I like him as a player and as a guy. He's got a job in it, ain't that? Do you know what I mean? He's get up there, big lad.
Imagine Sasa picking the ball up on the right, dropping a couple of step overs and just knocking it past the man and getting his head down and running onto it.
Imagine him against Dan Byrne on the wing.
That'd be a decent matchup.
Imagine the foot race.
If I wasn't a Wolves fan, I'd want to see Sarabi just to see how little Dan copes with it all. Personally, but
I don't want to see him in a Wolf shirt ever again. I ain't gonna lie. No. Can't stand the bloke. He's dog shit. But it's got to be Bellegarde. Get Bellegarde on the right, and just say, "Go on, son. Just do whatever you want to do."
Yeah, the only other way I thought he could do it is if you did 5 at the back and then 3 centre mids. So you play, you play Lamina. Probably Gomez and Doyle, and then you play, or you could put Bellegarde a bit further forward if that 3 potentially, and then you play Hwang and Cunha up front.
That line of bad shout, to be fair.
It's an option, isn't it? Like
adaptability. I was going to say Doyle sort of deserves somewhat of an honourable mention as well, because it's not he didn't do very much, I guess, in those first couple of sub appearances, but seems to have been someone who stepped up to the plate in recent games. I think partly he did come to a club still carrying an injury, and he seems to have taken his time. But I think you mentioned earlier, Tom, in terms of O'Neill's tactics and wanting that variety, it does feel like between Doyle, Traore, Lamina, Gomez, there's a few different combinations that work in there, a couple that probably don't, but they all offer something slightly different, and I think that's going to be really big moving forwards.
I think Tommy Doyle against Sheffield United, you got to, ain't it? Yeah. Used to play for him. And as well, one thing that did annoy me with Netar yesterday was he was taking a couple of set pieces off Doyle, and Doyle came on, he put that one excellent ball into the box. And then Netar was taking the next ones, and you're thinking, nah, Pedro, like this boy's got a set piece on him, like leave him, just leave this to Doyle. But yeah. Pedro, he's in the void, you know what I mean? He wants to be him at the moment, and I get it. And it ain't like Netar's got a poor delivery. Netar's got a
good set, delivery. Set for goal. Yeah.
But yeah, I think Doyle's delivery probably does just edge Netar's, and it was just a bit it was a bit frustrating that he took a couple of set pieces off Doyle's foot yesterday.
Yeah. I think.
You know what, Tom? I think that's a great shout. Maybe going three in the middle with the two up top.
Yeah. I think it's an option, isn't it? Although a lot of our goals have come from wide areas and cutting in, and that's the only thing I'd say about that. But
I was gonna say what I wouldn't be keen on, and this feels very, you know, Nuno a year into the Premier League, going with, you know, very similar to what you said, two up top of Hwang and Kuna, back five, and then a midfield three of, well, Doyle, Traore, Lamina, and it just feel very
stodgy,
rigid. Stodgy, a bit rigid in that midfield to really kind of have that exploitation. I think if you go back, I think if you've got Bellegarde, who can almost drift left and right, and alongside Kuna and Hwang, it feels like that's the most natural.
But with that rigid midfield, you could almost give Ait Nouri license to play aggressively high.
I was going to say, that would be very much the three at the back. I mean, I feel a bit sorry for Sheffield United in a way, because they've got a shit ton of injuries and some of their best two players, and we've got one of their other best players from last season as well. And
can you feel sorry for him in a couple of weeks' time, rather?
I mean, my sorriness will kind of extend about as far as that, but to be honest with them, because, you know, that's a team who Wolves need to be putting to the sword and really kind of stretching, to be honest, because it's going to say everyone should.
There's been a long time since, I don't know if it's ever happened, where a team's got 1 point after 10 games.
It's
not. I don't know what that Derby team
was,
got.
Was Sheffield United.
Was it on Match of the Day that this is the worst start to a Premier League season since Sheffield United's last time?
It was their second season under Wilder, wasn't it, when they got found out for, because their centre backs used to run a bit and stuff. That was all the tactics. That was their groundbreaking tactics that were found out quite quickly.
Yeah, I was going to say they get cut off on my graphic because I've basically done the teams who Wolves can reach and who they're in reach of, because of anything under sort of 16th at the moment, we are, you know, we're plenty ahead of at the moment. But I think at the moment, now we're 10 games in, a lot of football's been played, that middle pack is still very condensed and Wolves are right in the thick of it. We're 12th at the moment. I sort of think we're where we should be overall. Not necessarily, you know, with the context of what happened pre-season to a degree, but I think Wolves are very cemented in that 12th position. And I think how much we differentiate from 12th throughout the season is going to be dependent on how good a manager Gary O'Neill is. Because I think he's done really well in terms of steadying the ship. We're obviously a relatively consistent team now. The goal difference is concerning, but we've had those opportunities. But at the same time, look at Man United's goal difference.
And I think as well, if you look at there's teams down there with goal differences of like minus 16 already and minus 12. So for me, the goal difference isn't a concern. I think where we are at the moment is, I think 90% of Wolves fans would take that after 38 games to finish 12th.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I was looking at the league table myself this afternoon, and I thought, you know what's really good? We're looking up the table more so than over our shoulders. Because, obviously, we're on a run of form, and it's natural to get carried away. But when you look at the start of the season that we've had the hardest start of all the teams within the Premier League. So, I know football's played on grass and not on paper, but on paper we've got an easier sort of next 10 than the first 10 that we've had. So, with how the league's going at the moment, what's stopping us from catching Man United in 3 or 4 games' time and catching... Who else up there, like Brighton and
West Ham,
West Ham's and stuff like that? Because let's be honest, West Ham 2 points in front of us. Are West Ham any great shakes? No. Are Brentford any great shakes? No. Chelsea, they're just frigging ridiculously embarrassing.
Basket case.
Yeah, Man United are poor. Look at 5 wins, 5 losses, -5 goal difference after 10 games for Manchester United.
I hadn't even noticed that Man United were 5 wins and 5 losses. That is bonkers in terms of how
Manchester United have lost more games than everybody in that graphic apart from Everton, and look how crap Everton are. So with a bit of luck along the way, a bit of good form from a couple of players, you know, if Kuna can maybe start getting a couple of goals, if Wang can carry on his little purple patch, what's to stop us sort of overtaking Man United in 4 or 5 game weeks' time? I don't think there's anything. But I do understand, on the flip side, you've still got to be wary that we could always go 3 or 4 without a win, and before you know it, Forest, Everton and Fulham have caught up with you. But with the way that the club's going and with the start that we've had, the hardest start out of every team in the Premier League, may we add, you know, I think it's good to be able to look forward. And I feel like it's been quite a while since we've been able to look at the league table positively as a Wolves fan and think, where can we climb to now? Where can we progress? Because for the last, I'd probably say for the last 18 months at least, it's been more a case of who's going to catch us, more so than who can we catch.
Yeah.
But me personally, if that league table said 38, played 38... and we had 12th position next to us, I'd take it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think, say, when you put it in context of the pre-season, I think you're right. And to be honest, I think the table will most likely finish similar to that. And I think the teams who are in those positions, like, you know, us and Crystal Palace are in that mix, aren't we, where we are, you know, a 10th to 13th teams. And that's what I sort of say, I think, it's going to be dependent on how much more Gary O'Neill can eke out of this team. And I don't quite know, to be honest. And that's not a criticism of Gary O'Neill, because I think he's doing a very good job and he's doing a lot of interesting things.
Yeah, but Rich, where is he on the gonometer?
He's in green and yellow. He's in that lovely little bit. Just look, just to put on the record, a gonometer doesn't necessarily mean you want him gone, because you can be at one end or the other. It's not hard, guys. It's not hard. It was a silly joke, guys.
Oh, I can't believe how much fume that actually caused, man. People losing their shit over a graphic on the internet.
It's classless. Classless. It was a silly joke I thought of.
Rich,
you got to own it, mate.
It's fucking brilliant.
It's staying.
Fuck them. I mean, if anybody don't like it, goon bollocks.
You know what?
It's staying.
Luke, come to me when you've lost 5 on the bounce in 6 weeks' time.
And he's in the red.
That's all I'm saying. We all hate him again.
No, sack the board instead.
The God of me, that's brilliant, man.
Just because my head put Gary O'Neill gone. That is as far as the stretch was, and it did get a little bit out of control.
Rich, it's at first, you know, you thought you dropped a bollock, but it's a grapple of content for the podcast, mate.
Look, yeah. Absolutely, mate, brilliant. Honestly,
eyeballs. Honestly,
content is king. It's fine.
100%.
It's fine. I'll take those bullets. Don't worry. And I've always got you, Luke, to back me up anyway.
100%, mate. Fuck him.
We're in it together. It doesn't
we've
even
got
matter.
To be that he's here. Just like, you know what? Even when he's gone.
Well, really. I was going to say.
Even when he's gone, keep it and just change his picture to Eric Ten Hag or whoever our next manager will be.
He is gone now. But I mean, hey, look, man, just never ask forever. I don't care if I have to hold on to the graphic for 15 years. But no, right, before we wrap up, I'm going to throw it back over to you, Luke, because you've got an exciting new announcement at AFC Wolves, haven't you, mate?
Yeah, so in the new year, we are introducing Girls Only Sessions to follow on from the success of our development centre, which is every Wednesday night at Wolverhampton College, 6 till 7. If you're interested, football sessions for boys and girls aged between reception and year 5. Register on the website. But in the new year, we're introducing Girls Only Sessions and we're looking to grow the girls section of the club. And it's something that we're really excited about as a club. So thank you for highlighting that for us. And if anybody's looking to get their daughter, their niece, sister, whoever involved in football, then feel free to come down and check out our sessions in the new year.
Yeah, definitely, guys. If it applies to you, or even if it doesn't, but you might know some, definitely pass on the word. But until next time, which will be to preview the Sheffield United game, probably sort of Thursday at this point. That's it from us. So make sure you're following Wolves Fancast on our social media and make sure you like, share and subscribe as well, of course. Until next time, though, it's goodbye from Ed.
Yeah, see you guys.
It's goodbye from Tom.
See you all.
It's goodbye from Luke.
See you later.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you next time, guys.